Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 126, as we creep closer to the opening of training camp and the start of Season 3, the Terrible Podcast. Dave and Dave, we're not up to the standard today, were we, Dave? A little bit of a technical glitch.
Yeah, we had Nate Ulrich from the Akron Beacon Journal on this morning that we conducted. It was a great interview. Nate, anybody that's listened to the show before knows how good Nate is. Excuse me. My voice is not up to the standard either. Nate has come on with us over last year to break down the Browns games. He broke down the training camp and how the Browns look heading into training camp this year. Unfortunately, Gremlins or something got a hold of that file, so that interview is gone. But David, you'll be having Nate on ESPN 970 on Wednesday, I believe.
So, yep, we're going to be doing our AFC North preview, so we'll have a beat writer from each of the three teams and reviewing the team. So we'll get our preview in, and we'll splice that into the podcast here tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're listening to the podcast today on Tuesday, check back on Wednesday sometime in the evening. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to attempt to splice in David's interview on ESPN 970 onto the back end of this podcast. So David's going to ask him about the same line of questions, but it was a good interview. And, David, we got to get in groove, man.
It's preseason for us too. We got to make sure all the bells and whistles are in place as we open our own training camp. And the good news is I'm going to be working virtually every day from camp up there in the evenings on either 970 or DVE or 104.7, all the Steeler flagship networks. And so we'll be having a lot of Steeler talk, and we'll be getting daily updates with Dave as well. So we'll have hopefully a lot of good info from training camp.
Absolutely. And I guess we can kind of kick this show off with there's not a lot of Steeler news going around per se, but a lot of things that are going to affect the Steelers, of course, over the next few years. Ray Rice, the deadline yesterday was for the franchise tag players. I think a lot of people were confused too, David. I had a lot of people saying, well, I guess this means the Steelers won't sign Mike Wallace now. That deadline yesterday was for players that had been given the franchise tag that had not been signed to long-term deals or signed their franchise tag yet. So that was their deadline only. It had nothing to do with Mike Wallace. There was none of that deadline meant anything to Mike Wallace whatsoever. But the Ravens did reach a kind of an 11th hour deal, a five-year deal with Ray Rice. And when you break down these numbers, David, it really is a good deal for both sides. 5 years, he received a $15 million signing bonus, okay? So that breaks down to, when you amateurize that out, that's $3 million a year that'll be tacked on to each of his base salaries. As far as that goes, of course, he'll get that money this year, that $15 million, but for accounting purposes, it'll be broken up into five $3 million parts. His base salary in 2012 is $2 million. That's virtually guaranteed anyway, and that's why that's included into the $17 million guaranteed amount that you're probably reading about across the internet, because, they're not going to cut him now. He also, next year, he has a $7 million option bonus that is due him in March, and he'll have a $1 million base salary next year as well, too. What all this means is, he was scheduled to have the tag, wear the franchise tag for over, I think it's $7.7 million. His new tag number for 2012 is right at $5 million, which is his base salary of $2 million, his amortized part of his signing bonus, which is $3 million. So they saved $2.7-something million against the cap this year by signing him to a long-term deal. And on top of it, when you look, and here's the interesting thing about this deal, David, that $7 million option bonus that's due in March of of next year,
right?
That can be restructured, I believe, along the lines of the way Timmons and Woodley for the Steelers redid theirs this year. What they'll do is, barring some sort of injury, and that $7 million option bonus is guaranteed from injury for Ray Rice. So that's another $7 million that you're reading about as guaranteed in that deal. What they can do is they can take that $7 million, turn it into a signing bonus next March, and then divide that by four, the remaining 4 years, and spread it out that way, which will lower his cap hit in 2013 by another $5 million. So a really, really solid deal, not only for Ray Rice, but I think it's a cap-friendly deal for the Ravens as well, too. It does sort of give them an out next year.
And Dave, it puts them, just an updated number for the Ravens now, puts them $3.38 million under the cap as they stand right now.
Absolutely. And going into yesterday, they were right up against the cap. So they needed that space. Now the question is, now that they've got him signed long term, Joe Flacco is heading into the final year of his contract. Do you work a new deal with him now? Do you wait, let him play out his season and then hit him with the franchise tag next year? Which he, if he gets hit with that franchise tag next year, he's going to sign it right away, I'm willing to bet. Because
he's not going to get franchised. They're going to work a deal out, or he's going to end up, not being around. I don't see paying Joe Flacco $20 million for a year. So it's a roll of the dice here. Ideally, if you're Baltimore, what you'd love to do is sign him to a 2-year deal. That's probably not what Flacco wants to do. So I don't know if they'll get there. It's a big roll of the dice for both of them if they go into the season without a contract. But and the way that the Ravens talk about him, you think they're going to get something done. But, I don't know what they're, in terms of going into the season, negotiating and things, I don't know what their policy is. But it will be interesting to watch. And now that Rice has his money, they've taken care of the first guy. But, I don't know. Dave, I don't have the answer. And as I said, we're going to have our AFC North preview tomorrow. So we'll be asking, the Ravens beat writer that question as well.
Yeah, that's going to be definitely interesting to see how they do with Flacco going forward, because like you said, they only have about $3 million something now in cap space. I'm sure there's a few things that they can trim to create more cap space for this year, but they might very well let him slide and then hit him with the franchise tag or try to work out a long-term deal throughout the season. I don't know what their policy is compared to the Steelers. I know the Steelers, once they get out of training camp, they usually generally don't like to negotiate with players. So that's something to keep an eye on. Get ready for Ray Rice for at least 3 more years, I would say. I would kind of be, the amount of usage and amount of touches that he gets during the game, generally, through the passing game and all. It's rare to see these guys play out their full contracts, but I'm willing to bet he'll be around for at least 3 more years at the minimum. And in addition to Ray Rice yesterday, we had Matt Forte sign his sign a new deal. He, of course, was wearing the franchise tag for the Chicago Bears. And, boy, what a difference in contracts this is, David. Although, it's a 4-year deal. I forget what they say it totals out at. It really doesn't matter.
I think they said 28, but, it is structured a little differently.
Yeah, Forte now only got a $4 million signing bonus, David, and he got a $5 million roster bonus this year, along with a base salary of $800,000. So he basically walked away from the table with $9.8 million yesterday. It is unknown. He has a roster bonus of $4 million due in 2013 to him. I do not know if that, I have not read whether or not that's guaranteed from injury or not. Very well could be that it's not. Now, his cap hit in 2012, this year, is $6 point something million. So they were able to slightly lower his cap hit in 2012. But basically, this is a year-by-year deal on him, even though it's a 4-year deal, based on the fact that that $4 million roster bonus, if it's only guaranteed by injury, if Forte falls flat on his face, they very well could cut him with only a $3 million dead money hit to walk away from him completely. So I kind of find it surprising Forte agreed to that. If he was going to play year by year, why not just sign the franchise tag of $7-point-something million and see what he could get, you know, on the open market next year? Because I think really technically he only increased himself, you know, an extra couple of million there with the Bears going forward. But it just goes to show you how different contracts can be, even though the years are only 1 year off and the amounts are not too terribly far off.
Yeah, and a lot of people have written about this, and Mike Silver wrote about it and said, you know, Maurice Jones-Drew is the big loser here. He didn't get the big payday. I think people look at LeSean McCoy and these two contracts, and, you know, they're all kind of physically, you know, Dave, the idea of the big bruising back still is a, you know, as a goal line back is still a useful thing, but it's interesting to see the guys who are getting paid here all, they catch the ball pretty well. You know, they're multidimensional, but they're not, you know, these guys, the idea that you can't be a running back in the NFL at 5'8", 5'9", 5'10", is no longer really the case.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And the multi-purpose thing that you put there, because, I mean, let's face it, Jones-Drew, Ray Rice, Forte, all great out of the backfield, McCoy as well, too. And you know, that puts a premium on their value, in my opinion. So most definitely, you nailed it on that. And the interesting, if you're a Steelers fan, to kind of compare, and I've been going back and forth with Mark Cabali on this on Twitter. A lot of people are still afraid that the Steelers and Mike Wallace, you know, can't do a deal with a guaranteed $24-25 million. And all you have to do is look at the Ray Rice contract to see how this was done. And I've said all along throughout this process that the Steelers want some sort of a roster or option bonus in year two of the deal because of the fact that they want to be able to restructure that next year, 2013, to free up even more cap room. So, you know, theoretically, they can afford about a $5 million first round or first year cap hit on Mike Wallace in 2012, which they have plenty of room for. I've drawn it all out several times this offseason, most recently this past week. So, you know, there is a way to get this done. It's just a matter of getting Wallace to agree to the amounts, probably getting agreed to if indeed that option or roster bonus in year two is guaranteed against injury. But I'm still in firm belief, David, that they can get some sort of, you know, 20-something million dollar guaranteed deal done, possibly a five-year deal done, kind of structured similarly to the way Ray Rice was done.
Well, you know, I guess it goes back to the point of, you know, do they want to, even though they're saying all the things that they want to, do they really want to? And, you know, what kind of deals Wallace want? And is he looking at Vincent Jackson and how you're going to, yeah, you know, all the things you just said, they're all relevant, they're all important, and we don't really know where Mike Wallace's head is. And, I know Mark doesn't think the Steelers want to pay that kind of money, you know, commit that kind of money to that guy, even if it's only kind of turns out to be guaranteed for 3 years. And, you know, if I had to lean one way or the other, I think it's pretty close to a coin flip. I've said I don't think they're going to get a deal done before the season starts. And I think once that happens, you know, performance is going to dictate what happens. But I would say if a deal isn't done by the time the season starts, then the odds go down even more.
Oh, absolutely. If the deal's not done by the start of the season, yeah, absolutely. Then it's up to Wallace to, you know, hopefully he's reported by then and signed his tender. But if not, you know, we mentioned he's got to play the 6 games to have the accrued season. Another question I received via email was, can the Steelers fine Mike Wallace, you know, if he does not report for training camp? And the short answer is no, and that's because they can't. Because Mike Wallace, even though he is tendered, he is not under contract and thus not under any obligation to the club. And so, you know, players that are under contract are subject to fines up to $30,000 a day. But, you know, now should Wallace come in, sign the tender, get frustrated with negotiations and walk out of camp? Well, that's one thing, but that's such a strange hypothetical, you know, that's just not going to happen. He's either going to sign that tender, come in, and then work out a long-term deal or nothing, you know, as you stated there. So, no, they cannot fine him whatsoever. And also, just to squash, you know, some things circling the internet, David DeCastro not signing his rookie deal has absolutely no bearing whatsoever on Mike Wallace not getting his deal done right now.
Yep. Yes, important to point out. We've talked about it all along. It's just a slotting thing. It's going to go with the other guys in the first round. That's what's impacting him, nothing to do with Wallace. So, you know, we continue our Mike Wallace watch. It's been going on since February. It's going to go on until September 10th or so, and then we'll get to watch Mike. Then after that, it'll be Mike Wallace play instead of Mike Wallace watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what everybody's you know, we've got, and we'll cover an email here a little bit. We've got, you know, a lot of people are aggravated, man, and it's frustration. A lot of people who won't make what Mike Wallace has made for his Tinder offer alone in a lifetime are aggravated. And, of course, Pittsburgh, you know, a very blue-collar, you know, type town, hard-working town, and a lot of people cannot see what the holdup is, but it's all a process, and you know, it's part Mike Wallace and his agents are going through their side of the process, and the Steelers are going through their side of the process, and hopefully we'll get time here in a little bit to cover that email.
Okay. The other thing, Dave, is, you know, this is just newsworthy. We're reporting news. I don't have much to comment on it, but you know, we see, as somebody called it on Twitter yesterday, it's the silly season for the NFL, and teams want to get guys back in camp because, you know, the arrests start piling up. And, you know, I don't know that. In fact, I think somebody has done studies on this, and that NFL players don't get arrested at any greater degree than their age group and the general society. So, you know, it's just, as we've talked about 100 times, when you take men, young men, ages of 20 to 35, who have a lot of money, who are, you know, famous and everything that comes with that, sometimes they're going to be in bad decisions. Sometimes they're going to make bad decisions. Sometimes they're going to be in bad situations, and sometimes they're going to make bad decisions. So we had Marshawn Lynch get a DUI. We had Elmas Dumervil apparently flash a gun in a fit of road rage, and we had Dez Bryant slap his mama.
Hey, that
kind of covers it all. Right?
Yeah. That's all we need is a marijuana arrest in there, and I think we hit the jackpot there. The Elmas Dumervil thing is probably the thing that could that has the most bearing possibly on the Steelers, depending on how this plays out. Of course, his agent and I think his lawyer is saying, hey, when the truth comes out, it wasn't his gun. Blah, blah, blah. So we'll have to watch this because the Steelers, of course, play the Broncos in week one of the season. Even if it's a minimum one-game suspension to start the season, this could be, you know, this would be huge for the Broncos. Dumervil, of course, sat out last year after, what did he tear? I think he tore a pectoral muscle as well last year in training camp. And that came on the heels of him signing a $61.5 million contract extension. In 2009, he led the NFL with 17 sacks, and he followed that up in 2010 with 9.5 sacks. So this certainly, if you're a Steelers fan, it bears watching how this plays out with Dumervil because, hey, you know, we could be having, Mike Adams starting at tackle over there, a very, very young offensive line, Willie Colon moving over to left guard, first time in his career making a start there. So this could have huge implications on the game. As far as Dez Bryant goes, I kind of was sarcastic on Twitter, you know, Dez Bryant got arrested, you know, that's a shocker there. Marshawn Lynch, man, you know, man, these stupid decisions these guys make. It's just mind-blowing. And there, Ross Tucker, I think, was on Sirius satellite radio this morning, thinks that you could see is up to as high as a 6-game suspension for Marshawn Lynch. Of course, nothing but speculation there, but he has been in trouble with the law before. So you're going to be interesting if you've got some fantasy football drafts coming up anytime soon. You're definitely going to want to watch the status on a couple of those guys.
Yep. Yep, because the issue with Marshawn Lynch, obviously, kind of repeat offender, and it's just, you know, dumb stuff, and, you know, we see it every year, and fortunately, we haven't seen any of them out of the Steelers this year. And in fact, as we've talked about, July has been very quiet for the Steelers, unlike last July with the labor stuff and Harrison stuff and the Hines Ward stuff and everything else that was going around. This has been a, if you're a Steelers fan, thankfully quiet July, so... That's definitely one of the big positives. The Jets QB situation continues to get a lot of coverage. Santonio Holmes making some noise yesterday that two quarterback situation can't work in the NFL. And if If they run the ball more and his pass catching numbers go down, he's going to be unhappy. So that's what you want out of your star wide receiver, the guy you named captain last year. Go in there and it's all about me. Really helpful for the Jets situation.
Yeah, I tell you, the further you get away from the Steelers moving him out of town, the more you can see why, you know. Crazy. And what about those glasses he had on yesterday? Did you see those?
I did not see that.
Oh, my God. He had those big old Urkel glasses on yesterday. He looked ridiculous is what he looked. But getting back real quick, and we'll close out this first part of the show, one of our longtime listeners, Bob from Canada, boy, he sent us a rant, David.
Yes, he did.
a pretty big rant. Bob goes on to say, he is 55 years old now. He bleeds black and gold since grade 7. He wears something Steelers every day. He goes on to really get into this Mike Wallace situation and piss me off. He has all caps in there. You know, and also I heard from a guy on Twitter in the military yesterday as well, too. And, you know, there's a lot of frustration, as I said. And Bob goes on to say, we gave Wallace the opportunity to earn $2.75 million for 1 year. How many guys would die to be Steelers to do that? He writes, no. And Bob, Bob says he works for a factory in Chrysler. And he'll never earn $2.75 million in his lifetime. So, Bob, I'm going to ask you this. Take a step back, take a deep breath on this, because it is frustrating. Yeah, you know, people, all they see is the one side of it, mainly being a Steelers fan side of it, and it's one thing if Mike Wallace would be out there constantly getting quoted, or his agent constantly being quoted that he wants to get paid this, he wants to get paid that, but you know, Mike's been very, very quiet throughout this whole ordeal, as has his agent Buzz Cook. We don't know exactly what the Steelers are offering him in terms of a long-term deal. We can sit here and speculate all we want as far as that goes, but we just don't know. We do not know, you know, outside of the report by Matt Barrows early in the offseason that Mike Wallace wants Larry Fitzgerald-type money. We don't know. And, you know, David thinks that this is probably going to end at him just playing under the one-year restricted tender. I think otherwise. I think they're going to come to a long-term deal at some point during training camp. But, you know, just take a step back and look at both sides of the situation, because this very well could be the last contract that Mike Wallace gets, long-term deal. So he has to look out for himself, his family, everything associated with that side. And when he looks at guys like the Vincent Jackson and the DeSean Jacksons and players like that, and the deals that he got, you know, put yourself in your shoes. And I know it's hard to do that when you say you work at Chrysler, you're not going to make the $2-something million a year in your lifetime versus what he's going to get in 1 year signing the tender. You know, just try to take a step back with it. David, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, it's tough for all of us to kind of imagine that stuff. And when we see a guy like Albert Pujols, who's in a Cardinal for life, and he's deified in St. Louis, and he's miffed that the Cardinals over a $320 million contract, or whatever the full numbers were, they offer him $15 or $20 million less. And I'm not, you know, and people say $320 million or $340 million. Look, it's $20 million. I'm not... Yeah, you have a lot of money, but I think every person has the right to make their own decisions on these things. I talked about it a lot here in these hockey negotiations. Sid took less money, but if a guy wants to go out there and take every dollar that's offered to him, like Jaromir Jagr has always done, that's absolutely their right and their privilege if they're offered to be paid that. And, you know, we all have loyalty as fans because our connection, and we don't move around as much, but when you're drafted by a team and they have the right to trade you or cut you, I think the people actually involved in the business look at it as a business and take a bit of a different approach. Now, there are guys who have played as Steelers, and you hear when Ferrier and Hines Ward and Aaron Smith all leave the team and they talk about the culture, and that makes Pittsburgh something special and a team that's a destination and guys want to play for them. But it doesn't mean there aren't guys out there who think that, you know, maybe they're underappreciated or want to have a bigger role, just like maybe Mike Wallace feels like, you know, maybe he'll feel like Antonio Brown stealing the spotlight or Emmanuel Sanders, and it's all about Ben, just like maybe Jordan Stahl thought. And so you go and you look for a different opportunity elsewhere. So, I mean, I understand people can resent guys being greedy for money. But, you know, if you're Matt Forte and you had blown your knee out once and, you're never going to get a chance to get paid again, you need to stand there and pound the table a little bit. And we saw Drew Brees do it. And, Dave, you've commented that you've met him, and he seems like about as good a guy as you could possibly have and an icon in New Orleans. But he had to stand there and pound the table and take a stance. And it's living in this country and working, you know, as a member of the Players Association, these guys have rules that they have to operate around. But within that structure, they're allowed to do certain things, and Mike Wallace has done nothing wrong in that respect.
David, I think you put it a lot better than I just did there, in your thoughts on it. And Bob goes on to say, you know, he says that you and I have a kind of, you know, can play a bigger role in this, Bob says, you know, with the audience that Steelers Depot have, with you being on ESPN radio and all like that. You know, we can create talk, and I'm not going to blast a guy just to blast a guy. You know, if I think, you know, if there was more to what Mike Wallace was saying on his end, and I thought, you know, if we knew what the Steelers were offering, and I had more grounds to stand on to blast a guy, yeah, I would. But
we have
certain things with Steelers, and a lot of people, I think the draw to our podcast and the draw to Steelers Depot is that we look at things kind of as unbiased as possible with the Steelers. You're not going to get a lot of Homer stuff from David and I, and you know if somebody deserves to be blasted, we will blast away on them. But, in this situation, I think, as David says, I think you got to look at the overall picture as a business aspect and how that goes. And David, as far as his thoughts on how much do you think the media, blogs, talk radio, how much do you think play a role in any of this?
I think they absolutely play a role. Guys, certainly on talk radio, a lot of guys want to take an opinion that may be contrarian, or they want to take an opinion that's going to get inflamed callers, and sometimes that makes for good radio. Some people, I'm not a big fan of that, but, that maybe sometimes that generates listeners. So, yeah, guys, there are enough voices out there, and there are now enough writers out there with the internet that there are definitely people who look to troll and to fan flames and to get that going and to incite some of that stuff. And you know, that's why it's important for, you know, people should read a lot of stuff and get a lot of different opinions and form their own, because there's a lot of stuff out there that's not particularly good.
How much do you think it would play a role in the overall business decision of the club between the player, though?
Zero.
Yeah, exactly. And I believe that as well, too. Now, some cities, I don't know, you know, but being a Steelers fan and reading the media and listening to the media over the years and the way the Rooneys work and all like that, they're only going to do what's right for the organization, plain and simple. And, all the other stuff, talk radio, media, blog posts and all like that, I think it is what it is, and that's just talk.
Yep. Okay,
David. Bob has been a long. Let me tell you, Bob. This is not the first email that we have received from Bob. And Bob, we certainly do appreciate your feedback on this. We respect your passion as well too.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep them coming, man. It makes for good reading too.
And hopefully we didn't offend you with our responses and our look at it. But hopefully it clarifies both David and I our views on the situation overall.
Fantastic. Well, again, we're sorry about the little glitch in the technology with our interview with Nate Ulrich of the Akron Beacon Journal. It's not fair to him to have him redo that interview. Dave and I had this happen once before with an hour podcast, and we sat down and banged it out again. But since I'm going to have Nate on tomorrow, we'll make it up to you and bang that in the back end of this. And we'll continue with our AFC North look as the week goes on and next week. And if you want a full condensed version of it, I'll be doing that tomorrow on 970 ESPN between 4 and 7.
Absolutely. Follow David on Twitter, @HammerSpeaks. Follow his Pirates account, @DT on Pirates. follow Steelers Depot at Steelers Depot. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show at theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We appreciate everybody listening. We will be having more beat writers as we get closer to the start of the season as well from all the AFC divisional teams of the Steelers there.
Fantastic. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.
On Ohio.com. Nate's a friend of the show. As always, Nate, thanks for joining.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Hey, Nate, give me the deal with the Cleveland organization. The Holmgren's now been there. I guess he's been there 3 years. You've got Schumer there. Are things settled down? What's the anxiety level around the organization with the difficulties they've had since they've come back in the league, basically?
Well, it's kind of a weird dynamic because this is going to be, like you said, the third season of the Mike Holmgren era. So far, the team is 9-23 since he took over. Obviously, not too hot. But you know, the way that Mike Holmgren and his guys look at it is, this thing takes time. We've got a couple drafts under our belt. Now we've got a third one that we're really excited about. You know, we had a first-year head coach last year who didn't have the benefit of an off season with his team because of the lockout. So they're really, you know, they're thinking that this thing is going to get turned around still, and they're preaching patience. On the other hand, and this makes it the weird dynamic, the fan base here in Cleveland isn't extremely patient. Right. You know, they want a winner now. They're starving for a winner. And it's just been one regime after another since the Browns came back in 99, and this is just another one that hasn't produced a winner yet. So despite, you know, what they're being told, the fans here, they are growing impatient.
We look at what they've done in the draft, and this year it looked like maybe they didn't have all their ducks in a row, and you and I have talked about this, but they went and got Tony Richardson with the first pick, and they went and got Brandon Weeden. There was a question of whether they could wait until the second round. They decided to take him in the back of the first round. What's the situation going into camp with Colt McCoy and Brandon Weeden?
Well, the situation is the coaching staff has not officially named a starting quarterback. But everyone who follows it here in Cleveland, in the Cleveland market, knows that Brandon Weeden is the starting quarterback. Okay, I mean, there's no doubt in anyone's mind
right. That,
you know, it's just a matter of time before they make it official. But, yeah, Brandon Weeden is going to be the starter, barring injury or something absolutely crazy happening. But that's the way it's going to go. He is, you know, a guy they picked. Regardless of how it came down, they picked him, you know, in the first round of the draft, and he's going to be 29 years old on October 14th, so he doesn't have the luxury of time. Time's not on his side. They need him to play right away, and they're going to make him play right away, and they think he's going to be a big upgrade for him. He's got a big arm. I mean, he's a lot better than Colt McCoy's arm.
Which is a big deal in the Northeast. You know, we've talked about that before. I mean, when you're going to play in the Northeast in the you know, fall and the winter, you need to have a guy who can get the ball there.
Oh, no doubt about it. You got to have a guy who can deliver the ball in the wind that whips around off Lake Erie. And Brandon Whedon's got the arm for that. Now what's going to happen with Colt McCoy is still, you know, that's a big question mark heading into training camp for this team. You know, I think they're leaning toward keeping Seneca Wallace as the backup and trying to move Colt McCoy. So I would not be surprised at some point during the preseason they get Colt McCoy out of there. It's just an awkward situation. He's an incumbent starter, and I think the right thing to do for Brandon Weeden and for Colt McCoy is to get Colt McCoy out of there and give him a chance with another team, whether, you know, it's a backup situation or, you know, somebody gets hurt and maybe he gets a chance somewhere else.
Yeah, I got to agree with you. My perception is that he's a bright kid who probably can have a reasonably long career as a backup in the league, but I don't know that he'll ever have an impact as a starter. Tell me, Nate, OTAs and minicamp, generally what you like if you're the organization is for nothing to happen and just have the guys get their playbooks and go through this and have it be uneventful. Was there any takeaway for you for the OTAs and minicamp for the Browns?
Just the, you know, a little bit of what we talked about so far, the talent disparity in the quarterbacks, I think pretty much solidified in everyone's mind that Weeden is the guy. I think there are a couple positions that kind of, you know, position battles that kind of came to light. The couple things on defense to look for are Phil Taylor, the first-round pick from last year. Big, big defensive tackle. He got hurt lifting weights in May, tore a pectoral muscle, so he's going to be out for a while. They think he might be able to come back this season, but, you know, nobody knows for sure. Anyway, they've got two rookie defensive tackles, John Hughes from Cincinnati, he's a third-round pick, and Billy Wynn from Boise State, a sixth-round pick. Those two guys are really going to have to step up. I think there's a golden opportunity for one of them to fill in for Phil Taylor, and, you know, they might do some kind of rotation. That remains to be seen, but either way, you know, those guys are going to get thrown in the fire, and it's really going to, their development's going to be key because that defense struggled against the run last year.
Right, and we'll start with the defensive side of the ball here. You've got Sheard, the Pitt grad, who has had a very good season last year as a rookie, and Frosty Rucker from Cincinnati on the other side. So, you know, if and when Taylor comes back, it looks like the line's okay. But I look at the linebacking core, and I just wonder, are there playmakers there? How do you look at their linebacker core?
Well, you know, it's not solid. I mean, they've got DeQuell Jackson came back from a couple pectoral injuries and had a good season last year. He's a Pro Bowl alternate. But, yeah, I mean, Scott Fajita is getting up there in age. By the way, he's suspended right now.
Yep.
For the first three games for, you know,
the bounty
his alleged role in the bounty scandal when he was with the Saints. So they're going to have to put a backup guy in for him for the first three games. It looks like Kaluka Maiava will be the guy. And then Chris Gokong. Hey, Chris Gokong is an interesting case because, you know, the way I see it and the way a lot of people in Cleveland see it is he plays his best ball when he's at strong side linebacker. They have him a weak side. And, you know, the coaching staff, I think, is going to keep him there. But that's going to be something to watch, too. Yeah, the linebackers, I mean, hey, it's on them. It's on the defensive line. If they can't stop the run, teams are just going to keep, you know, running right down their throat. And especially in the AFC North, as you know, that is something that everyone's looking to do.
Sure.
And if they're vulnerable, it's going to really hurt them.
And seems to be set at the corners with Joe Hayden, the first-round pick in 10, and T.J. Ward at the strong safety, the second-round pick in 10. You got Sheldon Brown from the Eagles. It seems like the defensive backfield, you know, it seems to be in place.
Yeah, it is for the most part. The only thing is Sheldon Brown is 33. He's going into his 11th season. They have a guy named Dimitri Patterson, who actually played really well last year as a nickel corner. So he might push for a starting spot. So Sheldon Brown, I mean, nothing's guaranteed with him there. Another thing to look for is also a free safety. They've got Eric Hagg, who is a seventh round pick from a year ago. And he was kind of a surprise. One thing to take away from OTAs and mini camps is that he was working with the first team defense.
Yep.
Throughout all that stuff, even though they signed Usama Young last year as a free agent, he was with the Saints, and they really wanted him to come in and start as free safety. It hasn't panned out yet, and it doesn't look like it's going to, because Hagg certainly has the advantage heading into the training camp.
Let's flip over to the other side of the ball. We're talking with Nate Ulrich of the Akron Beacon Journal. You can follow Nate on Twitter at Nate Ulrich, ABJ, and you can find his work on Ohio.com. I know he's pounding out the season previews right now before the Browns go to camp next week. We talked about the quarterback situation, but really the Browns have spent their draft, particularly this year, really working on the offensive side of the ball. They got the big stud at running back, and it looks like they really have a solid offensive line. They took Mitchell Schwartz in the second round out of Cal with their third overall pick. They got Alex Mack at a center who also went to Cal, if I remember correctly, and, of course, the All-Pro Joe Thomas on the right. They're a team that looks like they may want to be the one that runs the ball down the other team's throat.
Yeah, and absolutely. With Trent Richardson, that's going to be
how's he looked?
Their bread and butter. Oh, he's looked great. But the thing is, you know, I say he's looked great just because he's such a physical specimen. The guy just looks like a player. He looks like an elite NFL back. You know, that's in shorts, though. So
right, football in shorts, right.
They're going to put on the pads soon. And I think that's when he'll actually really start to separate himself and really start to shine. But, yeah, I mean, the offensive line, right tackle has been a huge problem area for the Browns for in recent years, and they think they really solidified that with Mitchell Schwartz, a guy who started all 51 games of his career at Cal. You know, a guy who's played left tackle and right tackle. They're plugging him right there at right tackle. He's a really smart guy. He has 34 on the ACT. They think he's going to pick everything up on the fly and you know, be everything that they thought he would from day one. So, yeah, with him there, that it really should be a much better line. And the guards are going to be key, too. I mean, you know, your listeners probably familiar with Jason Pinkston from Pitt.
Sure, right, right.
And, you know, he got thrown in the fire last year at left guard. He started all 16 games. He's a fifth-round pick. So, you know, they didn't expect him to you know, have to start right away, but he did because of an injury to Eric Steinbach. So they were actually very pleased, and he exceeded expectations last year. So they're looking for him to continue to develop. And then at right guard, there's a guy named Sean Laval. He's going to be in his third year. And I don't think they're nearly as satisfied with him, but he's still young. I think he's got a lot to show and a lot to prove this year.
Nate, when the Browns did something unusual, I think people generally, you know, as closely as we follow football, one thing that kind of slips through the cracks is the supplemental draft, which happened last week. And there was a kid out of Baylor named Josh Gordon who was tied to the Browns. It was clear the Browns had interest, and then it's a little bit of a game. What round can you take him in, and where's he going to go? And people said maybe he's a third or fourth round type. Well, the Browns went and used next year's second round pick on this kid, a big, fast kid. They've got Greg Little, who was a second round pick last year. What was the thinking there? And, you know, clearly they're making a push to get some help for Whedon here right out of the chute.
Yeah, well, the thinking was that they need receivers. I mean, they're in desperate need of help in their receiving core. I mean, you mentioned Greg Little, and he was promising last year. I think he'll be a lot better this year. He's lost, you know, about 11, 12 pounds. He's leaner. He's quicker. He thinks that's going to help him. But he's got the bottom line is he's got to become a more consistent player. As much as he did flash at times last year, he dropped a bunch of passes. So, I mean, they've got him. They think that's one piece, okay? The rest is really up in the air. I mean, it really, really is an unproven unit. So they needed to add a legitimate number one receiver or at least a player with that kind of potential, and they think Josh Gordon has that kind of potential. That's why they used a second-round pick on him, because they think he can be that for him. Tom Hecker thinks he can contribute right away and, you know, also become – maybe even a starter a lot sooner than a lot of people expect.
Right. Nate, with T. Rich in the backfield and, you know, maybe Massaquai gets replaced by Gordon and on the Little on the other side, what kind of role is Josh Cribbs going to have, Joshua Cribbs, because he's a guy who's done a lot of damage against the Steelers in a lot of different ways, and he's a dynamic playmaker. Where is he going to be involved?
Yeah, I think he's going to be involved in the offense but just, you know, I think if Gordon develops the way they want him to, if Little makes the improvements that he hopes to, and if Massaquai can step up like they're begging him to, I think Cribbs is going to be, you know, used in special situations, not Wildcat per se. You know, Shermer's not really a fan of it, even though he did kind of bend his own rules a little bit and use it just a little bit last year. But I think they'll integrate him in the offense here and there. But I don't see him being in there getting a ton of snaps. I think they're going to, you know, let him do what he does best and be just one of the best all-around special teams in league history, special teams players, I should say, in league history. I think he'll be on coverage units, everything. And he got taken off some of that last year. And spoke out about it. He wanted to be on all of it, and I think that's where his real value is.
All right, Nate, we're going to wrap things up. The $64,000 question: can this team win 7 games? Well, that's a long silence, my friend. That's a long silence.
They certainly can, but I don't see it happening. I mean, I think it's going to be a better team. I think it's going to be a more exciting team to watch. I think the offense, hey, they've added. We've talked about Trent Richardson, Brandon Wheaton, Mitchell Schwartz, and Josh Gordon. That's 4 offensive picks in the first two rounds. So they're going to be young, you know, and I think they're going to be exciting, but they're going to certainly take their lumps. The third hardest schedule in the NFL certainly isn't going to help them. So I actually, right now, if I have to submit my final prediction without seeing training camp, I would go 6-10.
Yeah, I got to tell you, it's a team that looks like they're heading in the right direction, depending on how Whedon turns out. But they seem to be a couple playmakers on defense away from being taking that next step with the AFC North elite. But, hey, Nate, always a pleasure to talk to you. We'll be talking to you during the season. Appreciate you taking the time to be here on 970 ESPN in Pittsburgh.
All right, thanks again.